This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
We are up and live here on Pet Life Radio and Instagram. Here for you, here for your pets, here with Dr. Jeff Werber, live for the next 30 minutes here on Pet Life Radio. And just want to talk about anything you want to talk about. We have lots of questions. We had a great show last week. Lots of questions. Love the questions. So I'm glad your pets are saying hi. You're saying hi. That's great. Now, how to get a hold of me? Very easy. Here on Instagram, just type away. On Pet Life Radio, you can either just join us here if you're already here on live, or you can call in 877-385-8882. Once again, 877-385-8882. And would ask to ask any questions. And I'm continuing to wave to everybody. And let's see if we get some questions. Dog is upset at being a picky eater. How do I encourage better eating habits? Okay, so it's a good question. So, you know, interestingly, you know, cats we know are finicky, but dogs also can be a little bit on the finicky side. And a lot of times, believe it or not, dogs can get bored. I've had a number of cases where the clients will tell me that their dogs were eating something, doing great, and all of a sudden they just stopped eating it. So here's what I recommend to tell. Is it really a problem with the dog, or is it really just a problem with them wanting to eat or not wanting to eat? So here's what you do. When you have a dog, and now there's a six-month-old puppy that all of a sudden just stops eating, of course you want to look at the basics. Six-month-old, you know, look, it still could be teething. That could be causing some pain. They're losing their baby teeth. Their adult teeth are coming in. And that could cause some gum irritation. So that's a possible problem. Could be also just boredom. They want something new. So how do you tell the difference? So what I recommend doing is very simple. You just give them something really good, like hamburger, like steak, like, you know, chicken, obviously it's cooked, and see if they taste that. If they eat that, then you know that it's either the taste that they're looking for or a change in consistency. If they turn their noses to that as well, then that requires a little bit more diagnostics, a little more investigation, see what's going on. You know, it could be a million things. Take it to your veterinarian, check the mouth. You want to check the teeth in a six-month-old pup. Usually by 5.5, 6 months of age, all the adult teeth are in, shouldn't have a teething issue. Also, does the dog still want to chew on things, like really chew? If they do, then again, that's taking an oral problem, putting that lower on the list, and a taste problem or a boredom with the food problem higher on the list. So kind of those are the suggestions. You know, it's something that it's really, usually it's something simple, especially in a puppy, except for the teething. I don't think it's going to be a medical issue. I think it's more of a simple issue of just maybe wants a different food. So many times, I've had people call with that complaint and I say, okay, well, just try a piece of cheese, a piece of chicken, and they devour it in 2 seconds. Therefore, they want to eat. They just don't want to eat that food anymore. So I hope that answers your question. And let me know, try something else and we'll see. I'm just going through. She loves treats and chicken. You see, there we go. So that tells me that there are some other things that there may be a problem with. Just maybe try a different food. Try a different food. Or what you can do is take some of the good stuff that you just tested, like the chicken, and put up in little teeny pieces and add it to the food and see if that works. So my dog's ears are really stinky. Cleaning them seems to help a little bit, but no takeaway to the stink. What can I do? He's a doodle. All right. So one of the things that I would tell you to check if you haven't checked already, that as we know with doodles, and I've had doodles and my daughter has 2 doodles. So they grow a lot of hair in the ears. They can thank not the Labrador or the Golden or whatever, the Bernese Mountain Dog, or maybe the sheepdog might contribute to this if it's a sheepapoo or a sheepadoodle, they call it. But they grow hair in their ears. And with that, it's very hard to get all the smell out. And it's also really hard to keep them clean. So what you want to do is I would start with a thorough ear cleaning. And if you need to, go to the groomer or your veterinarian and do an ear pluck. Now, a lot of experts don't like plucking ears. I disagree, but I know why, because I've had a very interesting conversation with a board-certified veterinary dermatologist who actually specializes in ears. And it was that when many establishments, including veterinarians, pluck hair, they're using an instrument, okay? And that instrument is, we call it a hemostat or a Kelly or a mosquito if it's really small. And when they are actually plucking the hair, they're getting some of the skin inside the ear. And that causes many problems. It's very tender, very painful for the dog. And therefore, they don't like the idea of plucking. They just use their fingers. My feeling is this, that we know that when you have a lot of hair in the ears, that is impeding airflow. It's also causing more darkness down in that ear canal. So now you have a dark, moist, because the air in there and the moisture, it's not evaporating. So when you have a dark, moist environment, that's a perfect environment for yeast. Yeast, first of all, has a smell, and it's a major cause of ear infection. As a matter of fact, there are more dogs that have ear infections due to yeast than bacteria. There seems to be in a healthy ear a nice balance between the bacteria in the ear and the yeast in the ear, and they kind of keep each other in check. But when that balance becomes an imbalance, and it's usually the yeast winning out, then we get these ear infections. And that's that dark, smelly, waxy debris. So if you clean the ears, but you don't get that rid of that hair in the ear, you're going to continue to get that smell, those yeast infections. And that is a problem. Hold on while I vomit. Well, that's what it's going to cause. I want to say hi to everybody. So the stinky ears, so that's what's happening. And it really is disgusting. That's where the vomit comes in, because it is gross. And people just don't like that smell. I'm used to it. In fact, when I'm doing an exam, and one of the ways I tell about ears, seriously, is people think I'm nuts. What are you doing? And I'm lifting up the ear and I take a big whiff and I can pick that smell up. I can pick the smell of the yeast up, and they think I'm gross, and maybe I am, but I got to tell you, it works. I can really tell a lot just from that. And you can imagine when the complaint is that it stinks a lot, then you know that there is some sort of imbalance, probably yeast over bacteria. So it's something that needs to be checked and evaluated. So that's, you know, kind of when that's what you need to do. So thorough ear clean, have the ears plucked. Now, what you should also do is have your veterinarian do a sample, a smear. It's a cytology smear. I don't recommend culturing right away. It's going to show you, yes, you have yeast or bacteria. Do you really need that? Let's put it this way. For routine, I'll do it, an ear smear, put it under the microscope, see what's growing, see if usually we're going to have a lot of yeast, some bacteria, and we'll treat accordingly. Now, it's very interesting about ear medications. It freaks people out when they hear this. And it is something that, you know, again, I can't always explain, but here's what happens. Most of the veterinary approved prescription ear products have a gentamicin or something called an aminoglycoside antibiotic. They're very effective. However, they're also ototoxic, toxic to the ear. Whoa, wait a second. So we're going to put something in the ear to help the infection that's also potentially toxic to the ear. And the difference is this. If the tympanum, the eardrum, is intact, it's not a problem. But if it's not intact, yes, it can cause some inner and middle ear inflammation, and it can cause problems. So the first thing you do if you're going to use it, make sure the ears are clean, make sure the tympanum is intact, and they're very safe. Now, there are some other ear medications, approved ear medications on the market that are using like a quinolone antibiotic instead of aminoglycoside, something like Posatex. So those are also good for the ear. Most of the ear preparations have anti-yeast capabilities also, and that's very important. But do check with your veterinarian. But there are medications that people. Now, here's another thing, that when you are given ear meds by your veterinarian even, and this is something I can never really understand, it never made sense to me, they come with these long nozzles. The important thing is they want you to put that long nozzle down in the ear and apply the medication. Now, if you look at the instructions that your veterinarian is going to give you, it's going to say, put 4 to 5 or 5 to 6 or 6 drops of the stuff in the ear. Wait a second. If I got this long nozzle going down the ear, how can I count drops? And if you hold it up so you can count the drops, there's no way that stuff's going to get all the way down into the ear, especially if you have hair in the ear. It's not going to get down to where it needs to go to work. So the same doc I talked to with the expert in ears, and I've been doing this for a long time anyway. What we recommend doing is having the doctor, the veterinarian, send you home with what's called the tuberculin syringe. It's a skinny syringe. And what you do is the instructions should now read, put in 0.4 or 0.5 or up to 0.8 or even in a huge dog, 1 cc of the medication in the ear. So what you do is you fill up the syringe to whatever the instructions are. Small dog, it might be 0.3 or 0.4 ml. Big dog might be 1 ml. And then you insert that into the ear and then gently push the plunger down. So now you are not only getting the right amount, but you're getting it and you're applying it where it needs to go. down deeper into the ear canal. So that's something, a little trick I've learned, been using it for a long time. And you might want to talk to your veterinarian about that, but that's important. Okay. Yeah, his ears got plucked by the vet. So if they are plucked, then it might be time then. If they still smell, it might be time for that. Either cytology, if that's not been done, or maybe even a culture. In other words, we may have something else going on in that ear, and the medication that you're using, we don't usually culture right away, may not be hitting all the bugs. So if this is going on for a while, the ears are plucked, they look clean. Now, there are other things that we need to consider, and twofold. Number one, when ears are continually getting infected like that, and the smell is always there, it's probably an underlying allergy. Is very, not just infection. The infection, as often with skin, is secondary to the allergy. So we got to find out what the dog is allergic to and understand that some of the anti-allergy medications for skin, or if the ear is always very inflamed, and this is one time that we typically, even when we're using Apoquil or Cytopoint for allergy, and we don't usually want to or need to use prednisone along with the newer anti-allergy medications. But in cases of chronic ear infection, and you have a very inflamed ear, if that ear is inflamed, the medication is not going to really work. And this is where it is recommended. And I've been doing it for a while. And this guy was great because he agreed with me, and he's on faculty at one of the vet schools, that we should use, if we need to, cortisone, prednisone as well, in order to just bring down the inflammation in that ear canal for two reasons. Number one, to add comfort to the pet, most importantly, but also to allow the medication that we're putting in the ear a chance to work. So again, talk to your veterinarian, but that might be a good time, despite an infection, despite the fact that he's already on anti-allergy medication, to use some cortisone as well. All right. Is it a problem if my puppy has been crying a lot, tear stains? Is there anything I can do to help this? So yes. First of all, there are many products, over-the-counter products on the market that could help. Eye Envy, Angel Eyes, Clear Eyes, etc. However, what we do, and when those don't work, there is a antibiotic. It's a powdered antibiotic. It's actually also used as a sheep dewormer. It comes in big bulk sizes, and they put it into the troughs, the water troughs of sheep. And it's called Tylosin is the antibiotic, Thailand powder. For some reason, when you take a small amount of Thailand powder, sprinkle it on their food, it doesn't necessarily reduce the tearing, but it reduces the staining. And it doesn't look as bad. The dogs are going to tear anyway. Now, of course, if the tears are always excessive, you might consider what's called a nasolacrimal duct flush, done by a veterinarian under some sort of mild sedation. And we put a little thin cannula down in the tear ducts and flush. You want to flush. So when you inject through saline into those cannula, through a cannula into the ducts, it starts coming out of the nose because that's where normal tears drain. When those ducts are plugged, then what happens is they can't drain out of the nose. So they overpour and they come out over the lower eyelid and they drain the face. So first make sure that the tear duct, it's called the nasolacrimal duct system, is open. And if that's working, then try something like Thailand powder, and that will minimize the staining. That's very effective and we love it. All right. A lot of you joining. I love it. I'd love you joining. Also ask some questions. We love the questions even more. Can you talk about dry eye? We're talking about a dog on steroids. Okay, so dry eye is almost the opposite of what I just discussed. Instead of overproducing tears, it's underproducing tears. So there's a test that your veterinarian can do, and it's called the Schirmer tear test. We put these little, like a little, almost look like a little litmus paper in an ear, and it's got little marks on it, and you leave it in for 1 minute, and then you see how much tears have made it down this little piece of litmus. And if it's less than 5 millimeters, then we have something called dry eye, KCS, keratoconjunctivitis cica, cica meaning dry. So a couple of things that can be done. One, there's some medications, something called Optimmune, which is often used. That's a cyclosporin. That seems to help to tear production. The other thing that a trick that we've used is another medication called pilocarpine. It's also a drop that can be put in the eye. But the trick that I've learned is to put some pilocarpine, a couple of drops again in the food, and it also stimulates tear production. And sometimes there's not a lot that can be done. You do your best. So then you get some sort of artificial tears. You can get it through your veterinarian. And that will just also, you put that in several times a day, and that will help just keep the eyes lubricated. What happens is when the eyes get too dry, then you see this really thick debris and it's greasy and it leaves these chunks of stuff on the eye. And these eyes are also more prone to infection. Why? Because the cornea is typically seven layers. The first two layers are tear film layers. Then you have the actual layers of the cornea, which is epithelium, down to what's called Descemet's membrane. And that membrane is the membrane we need to protect, because if that membrane ruptures because of, for example, a deep corneal ulcer, then we have the aqueous coming out of the front part of the eye, and that is a serious problem. Definitely needs surgery, some sort of medication sometimes itself, but an intervention by a veterinarian, usually a veterinary ophthalmologist, to help prevent. And when we get a really deep ulcer down to Descemet's membrane, a lot of times we will then recommend a consult with a board-certified veterinary ophthalmologist, because those are very, very serious. But when you have dry eye and you lose those tear film layers, you're losing the very front part of eye protection. And that's why these eyes are subject to a lot more damage. The corneas are subjected to more damage and infection, etc. So keep in mind that. That's very, very important. Okay, we have to take our break here on Pet Life Radio. So Mark's going to run some commercials. I'm going to put you on mute here on Pet Life Radio. And IG, don't go away. We'll still talk during the commercials. And we'll be right back after these short messages.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
We're back live here on Pet Life Radio. Also, we're talking about a Cavalier that has tearing and also snoring. I don't think they're directly related, but I think they're both caused by the same anatomical issue, and that is the smaller pushed-in face, and I think it's putting some pressure on the pharynx, so they're snoring on the nasal cavity, and maybe because the nasal cavity is somewhat affected by that anatomy, then that's why they're tearing, is because the same thing is causing that compression of the nasolacrimal ducts going from the eyes out through the nose. So good question. And it might be just something you got to deal with. My 6-month-old calf has been a low appetite, picky eater, just threw up, and it's yellow. Didn't eat dinner last night. Aha. So there's the answer right there. So, you know, we get GERD, all right? It's a gastroesophageal reflux disease, and that's heartburn. That's the basis of heartburn. And it's really nothing to do with the heart, but that acidic feeling that we get, it's because it happens where the food kind of gets, you know, right there, and you get this gastric juice. And when does this gastric juice come up? Often on an active but empty stomach. So when we feed or don't feed a dinner or nothing as a late night snack, this can happen. It happens in a lot of breeds, and it happens a lot, for example, in Frenchies. I mean, I had a case once where this other hospital wanted to do $8 million worth of testing. And I took one look at the dog who is running around my office like a bat out of hell, happy as can be. There's no way. That's why I say you need to see these patients. You just can't go by clinical signs. You go by clinical signs, and the program in your hospital that can be run by a monkey says, oh my God, vomiting. Well, you got to do X, you got to do this, you got to do this. Let's get a history. Let's do a physical. Let's see what's that. Is this dog sick? Does it look like it's sick? No. So I started asking the owner. I said, so what time do you feed dinner? He goes, 5:00. I said, okay. Now, what time does he usually go to bed? He said, late night walk, 10. When the owner goes to bed, the dog goes to bed. So I said, well, let's try this. I want you to take about a third of dinner, set it aside, and I want you to give it to him about 10 minutes before you go to bed. All right? See if that helps. If it doesn't help, we're going to add one more thing. We're going to give half of a Pepcid, over-the-counter Pepcid AC, about 15 minutes before that late night snack. And with that, P.S., the dog did great. So that yellow bile, that is basically from an empty stomach. The dog didn't eat lunch. So what I'd recommend, not only if you have a dog that does this frequently, again, feed dinner, but maybe set a little aside a little bit of that dinner and feed it as a late night snack. When they go to bed, they should have something in their stomach. So when they get that surge of gastric secretion, it'll have something to work on. Because if it doesn't, it's going to come up. And since we're vertical creatures, so when it happens to us, it comes up the esophagus. We feel that burning sensation. That's the quote unquote heartburn, nothing to do with the heart. And then it goes back down. But dogs are horizontal. So when it starts coming up, it keeps coming up and they spit up that yellow bile. It's very, very common and fortunately not serious. All right. I tried, but you refused to eat. I feel like just giving her cheese and treats is bad for her. No. You know, first of all, you feed her an earlier lunch. And again, if she's 6 months, you don't need lunch anymore. 2 meals a day. Just try feeding the morning breakfast and then dinner. Feed dinner like at 5 or 6. And if this yellow bile seems to be a regular problem, then you go ahead and do the late night snack first by itself, because that often solves the problem. If you need a little more help than that, maybe talk to your veterinarian about a little Pepcid or Omeprazole about 15 minutes before, and they do just fine. All right. So another thing I wanted to talk about while we have some time, if the questions come in, of course, I'll stop to answer the questions, but she won't eat her first meal until 3. That's interesting. Well, then just make sure she has some kind of last meal or something late. It could be anything, just a little something in the stomach, a couple of milk, whatever. And see if it's cheese she likes, then give a little bit of cheese. That's okay too. All right. One thing that I had an issue over the weekend, and this is kind of serious stuff. I don't like to blast other places, but I also don't like false advertising. And I'll be somewhat brief. I'll try to be somewhat nice, but I'm not usually that nice. In cases like this, I'll do my best. So one of my patients ended up at one of the probably arguably the largest, most famous emergency hospital. I don't mean famous because of good. I mean famous because it's huge and it's one of the largest corporate entities, a hospital owned by corporate, 3 letters, and you probably know them well. If you know me, you know that I actually was involved with one for a while, and 18 and one or so months until I got fired. And this client calls me, and I'm just not, there were too many things that didn't make sense of things they did do, didn't do. And I'm thinking, whoa, who's taking care of this dog? And it was one of the interns. And then I called the hospital and I wanted to know what is going on with this patient. One of my patients have to know. And I said, who's the criticalist on staff? A criticalist means board certified in emergency medicine and critical care. Now, if you have a hospital that is, they claim to be one of the largest hospitals in the country and one of the best, if not the best in the country, you damn well should have a specialist on staff every single shift. No. So I asked if the doctor was an intern. Yes. And not an internist, an intern. What does that mean? That they graduated recently. They get these first jobs as interns, and of course, they get the lousy shift. They're the overnight shift. So I said, well, is there someone else that they consult with? Oh yeah, there's another doctor. I said, is she an intern? No, she's been out over a year. I said, well, has she been out over 3 years? And there's a pause, and she goes, no. I'm going, talk about the blind leading the blind. You take your dog with confidence to someone who claims to be one of the best, and there's not a single board-certified internist, critical care specialist, emergency medicine doc on staff, and they're not even available to consult with on virtually if you have to. No, they come in at 7. So here's my warning to all of you. This is very important, and it frustrates the crap out of me. And that is, you should call every emergency facility in your area, everyone, anyone that you think you may need to take your dog. Remember, this is where AirVet comes in very handy. I hate to promote my own thing, but 95% of emergencies aren't. And if you get to talk virtually, real time, on the phone with a veterinarian who can see the pet, answer the right questions, get the right answers, and tell you, no, this does not need to go to emergency. It looks bad, but not an emergency. Wait until your doctor can see it. I'm available for 3 days on the app. But you should call in advance and ask the question. Over the night shift from midnight to 8 a.m. or 7 a.m. or 11 to 7, whatever it is, do you have a criticalist or an emergency medicine board certified doctor on staff? And if the answer is no, you say, well, are they at least available virtually? If the answer is no, that is not where you want to take your dog or cat or any pet. Why? Because the doctors on staff are literally new can be. And I hate to say it, but they know nothing. Because when you graduate veterinary school, you got the textbook knowledge, but you don't have garbage when it comes to actual practical on-hand skills to know what to do. And they made so many mistakes with this animal that it was driving me nuts. So for your own good, for your own pet's safety, you should get on the horn, look online, wherever the closest ones here in LA, for example, it would be VEG, which I kind of like. It would be VCA ASEC. It would be Access, which is now Thrive, but it's Access Culver City. It would be VCA West Los Angeles. Beware. So all of these places that claim to be so great, that's ASG in Glendale. These are all good hospitals. They have really good doctors on their specialist side. I mean, I love the surgeons at ASEC. I was very thrilled when I went to visit VEG. And that's not a bad idea either, guys. If you have one of these places in your neighborhood, go visit them, see the facility, and ask the right questions. MASH, likewise. Whatever they're claiming to be, I am dissatisfied with most of them. And it's just, it's a shame. Because when you need them the most, you want the best, and the best isn't available. So I know it sounds harsh, and I know that people are going to be really pissed at me, but guess what? I don't care. I want to do what's right. And when you have a problem, you need to get some answers, and you don't want to go and be seen by a veterinarian who just graduated 6 months ago, or in this case, now we're already into July, maybe a month ago. They graduated in May or June of anywhere they went to vet school, and now there's their first job, and they're working this shift, and I hate to say it, they know nothing. Nothing. Well, I kind of did, because I also worked as a tech for 4 years trying to get into vet school. So I actually did graduate with some skills and some knowledge, not just the book knowledge, but actually hands-on experience. But most don't. Most go are really smart, which I wasn't, and I'm still not, but I may not have whatever knowledge I have. Coupled with the experience, that gives me wisdom. And it's really all about the wisdom. They may graduate, have all the book knowledge. They could have been a straight A student and they got the best internship. But guess what? They don't still know crap. So you just got to be really careful. I was so frustrated. P.S. This pet dog finally had to be put to sleep. I wouldn't say it was their fault. I think it was a really bad problem anyway. But there were just too many errors. And I'm thinking about the things they did and the things more important that they didn't do, given the opportunity. And it was really, for me, very frustrating to see. And especially with this owner, I've been taking care of this dog for 13 years since it's a puppy. And this dog loved me. And it really is hard to see. So with that, on this very sad note, sorry about that. Anyway, just do your best. And in Pasadena, you have Glendale ASG. It's now, I think it's a VCA also. Just make sure that they have 24-hour care. So the one that comes the closest, and I've gotten decent feedback from, is called VEG. It's the Veterinary Emergency Group. It's on Wilshire, 2700 Wilshire, I think it is, in Santa Monica. It's on the very east end of Santa Monica, right by where West LA, Santa Monica kind of butt up against each other. That was good. I like VCA ASEC. I've had clients of mine have good experience. There's good doctors, but you want to make sure the good doctors are on staff, are there when you need them. And that makes a big difference. So anyway, with that joyful note, I'm going to sign off. If you have any questions during the week, please get a hold of me. You can always reach me at drjeff@petliferadio.com. You can reach me at jeff@airvet.com. Of course, here on Instagram, just go on, type away. Love to hear from you. I will do my best to get back to you. And anyway, hope that I can do my best to solve your issues. Would love to hear from you during the week. All right. Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you here next week. Same bat time, same bat channel, here on Pet Life Radio, here on Instagram Live. And we'll see you then. Bye-bye.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.